This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This is the Lombardi Line Wednesday edition of the program alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi out on the East Coast. I'm Stormy Bonantoni back in today after a little hiatus here. So shout out, thank you to our guys, Femi Abebefe and Ben Wilson, filling in for me the last couple of days, Michael. But happy to be back with you. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. Thank you, Stormy. It's good to have you back. We missed you. We were thankful that the Giants covered and keep you going in Survivor. We'll discuss who maybe we should go with this week, but I was happy for that. And I love to hear about the CFP committee event that you had that you were going to. I can't wait to hear where they come up with all these ideas that emanate from that room. So please shed some light.
Yeah, Michael, it was funny, by the way, though, just referencing the Giants here real quickly, because as that game was going on Sunday, I was like, gosh, you know what? It's a good
thing. Where were you? Were you back in Vegas or did you go to Indianapolis?
I was headed to Dallas, but I was at home for that game. I had come home and I was watching the game and then I had to leave. But I kid you not, I'm watching the game on my couch and I'm like, you know what? Thank goodness I don't have to go on the show tomorrow and answer for this. You know, I get a couple of days away. And then immediately I was like, oh man, I want to be on the show so bad so that I can talk about the Giants comeback. What a crazy freaking game. But yes, definitely fortunate, to say the least, that they were able to pull that off there late in the game. As for the CFP event, Michael, out there in Dallas, it was really, really cool and unique. And I think as we get to the times when we actually have some of these CFP rankings, that I can maybe shed some light on what really goes on in the room a little bit better. A couple of the takeaways I thought were particularly unique. And for anybody who doesn't know, I went to a mock selection committee event out there in Grapevine, Texas, in the actual room where they break everything down on a week-to-week basis later on in the season, the College Football Playoff Committee does, and learned about their process, learned about how they break down teams, how they go about ranking. And one thing that I found super unique was that they don't even, and granted, you know in the back of your mind what the rankings were from the week prior that you had set, but they don't go off of those headed into the next week. Like, it is a clean slate, clean sheet, blank slate every time that they walk into that room. And they go kind of segmented numbers by numbers, 1 through 3, 4 through 6, or 4 through 7, voting on chunks of what teams deserve to be where at certain points. And you can go back and re-rank and re-vote, and it is a long, long, tedious process. But I definitely have a lot more respect for what goes on in that room, Michael.
You know, I think that's a really good strategy for us as bettors. I think we too often carry last week's game into this week's game. We did it in the preseason when the Rams got blown out by Denver 41-0, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody was saying there's no way they could beat the Seahawks. They did. I mean, the same thing last week. You know, we saw teams like Buffalo struggle. There was a lot of late money came in on the Raiders, and Buffalo came back and played really well. And, you know, then you look at the Saints and you say, okay, the Saints squeak one out. They're going to play better against Carolina. They haven't really played well. They're 2-0, haven't played well. So I think you have to leave it all behind and kind of start the slate clean. What I like about week three is we now have data. We have eight quarters of football that we can evaluate, that we have some statistical data that we can look at and say, okay, this team's better than I thought. This team's worse than I thought. This team really needs to take a giant mother may I step forward, because even though they might be 2-0, their power rankings are not as good. Philadelphia being a perfect example. I mean, Philly's power rankings for me does not put them in the top five based on the numerical data. No subjectivity. So that tells you what I've been saying all along is they're not near where they were. They're 2-0 and they have 15 weeks to fix it. But those numbers don't lie.
That's a great tease too, Michael, for a few things that we have coming up later on in the show. In hour two, we're going to get Lombardi's list, his top five teams in the NFL right now, as well as the bottom feeders, bottom five. And there are some new teams that are popping up in each of those lists based on what we've seen these first 2 weeks of the season. We've also got a storm warning because there are some teams in the NFL and college football, Michael, that my panic meter is really high on. And I want to get your opinion if I should be panicked or if maybe we need a little bit of patience and there could be some betting opportunities to buy buy in on those teams. But first, let's get to some of the headlines of the day and some breaking news within the last hour or two in wake of Nick Chubb's awful, gruesome season-ending knee injury. And you feel so much for him. The Cleveland Browns have taken a step forward, re-signing Kareem Hunt to a one-year deal worth up to $4 million, according to Adam Schefter. And as Schefty pointed out, Hunt visited the Saints, the Colts, talked to a number of teams waiting to find the right deal, and he just winds up back in the same city and the same team that he spent the last 4 years.
Yeah, and they need him. Yep. You know, they're going to need him, especially in the passing game. You know, that was his role last year, was always going to be a third down back. He didn't run the ball. He didn't run the ball as hard last year as we've seen him. A lot of his problems now are going to be what is conditioning like. You know, when he went to New Orleans, it was not good. When he went to Indianapolis, it was not good. And they all, both teams were looking for a running back and they passed because they felt like his conditioning was going to be an issue. So hopefully he'll be in better shape. Will they use him this week? I mean, depending on his conditioning, I think that'll really do. But I do think they are taking they're really taking too much of a bath in terms of the betting market with this number against Tennessee. This defense has not allowed any team to get into the red zone against them. I know that Pickett made the big touchdown pass, so that scored. But this defense has been outstanding, as good as Dallas, if not better, close to anything, the best thing I've seen. So they're going up against a Tennessee team this week that struggles to put 12, 13 consistent plays together during a period. So I just think this number moving away from them is somewhat strange. I know Chubb's huge, and I know Chubb matters tremendously, but I also know that, you know, and I also know Watson isn't playing well to the level he needs to play, but they are really good on defense.
Yeah, 73% of the bets, to your point, 63% have handled taking the 3 points in Cleveland against the Browns with Chubb out of the lineup. Kevin Stefanski confirming yesterday that the young player Jerome Ford, 2022, fifth round pick out of Cincinnati, he'll be the team's featured back with Kareem Hunt coming in there. And we do know, like, what a great 1-2 punch that Hunt was with Chubb. You're not going to be able to replace the production of a player like that in any way, but still maybe be able to put something together in a positive way. There was a time when he was leading the league in rushing yards, right? So you know that the talent is certainly there and he's capable. But to your point about that defense and not wasting it, Deshaun Watson, Michael, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show because they are one of the teams that's on my panic meter, but none of that other stuff matters if you have a great running game, you have a great defense, if your quarterback isn't doing what he needs to do. And you know, I've been somebody all offseason that was saying, hey, the six game sample that we saw of Deshaun Watson last year, that wasn't him. This year, he's going to have the full offseason. He's going to have the full time to get to know his teammates and coaches and understand the system and be there from day one. Things are going to be great. They have not been.
No, they haven't been at all. I mean, when you look at EPA and you do all the empirical data that you go through on quarterbacks, he ranks 30th. I mean, only Justin Fields and Winston and Wilson are behind him. I mean, it's not good, and it doesn't pass the numbers test, but also doesn't pass the eye test. And I wrote about it this week in VSiN after the game. You know, to me, when we watched him in Houston, he played well, but they won 4 games that 1 year. It wasn't all his fault. But what I remember going back, and I did, when Will Fuller played for the Texans, and Will Fuller was healthy and active, which wasn't all the time, right? They were really good. Those two together, they would make throws down the field. That was, I don't want to say it was their offense, but that kind of was what really he depended upon. And he had Hopkins to make the sensational catch when he threw the ball in traffic. And so far, his accuracy, like the first throw of the game, yes, the kid Bryant dropped it, right? But it was a horrible throw, Stormy. Mm-hmm. That throw can't be there. His accuracy is really not good right now. His mechanics are not good. And concerningly, he's not throwing the football. He's holding it. He's not really letting it go. There's no rhythm to what he's doing. And I thought for sure in this offense where he would be able to utilize the play action pass stuff, no, it hasn't really transpired at all.
Yeah, to your point about the accuracy, off target on 26.5% of pass attempts. So not only has it not been good, actually worst in the NFL through 2 games so far. He's been sacked 6 times on 18 dropbacks when pressured. And I know he took sacks in Houston too, but he balanced it out with the explosive plays, right? Like the magical plays. And we haven't seen any of that balance to this point. It's just been, you know, constant struggling, especially when under pressure. 3 of 11, like I said, and sacked six times on 18 dropbacks when pressured. The Browns, a 3-point favorite again against the Titans. The total 39, seeing 39s and a half. Their win total this year, 9.5, still juiced over minus 150. As far as the division goes, plus 330, second shot now at behind the even money Ravens in the AFC North. You have the Bengals now at plus 475. Steelers plus 550. Tomlin, by the way, says the Steelers have lost their mojo and need to get it back. I do agree. But that was interesting, too, to see the Bengals now third on the odds board in the division with the Joe Burrow re-aggravated calf situation that he's got going on there.
Yeah, and by all indications, the way this line is now, it's, you know, it's pretty steady that it's, well, it's back up to 2.5 this morning. I think a lot of that, the movement back was related to what Zach Taylor says that, you know, I think Ian Rappaport reported today that Burrow is making significant progress, that it's not going to get healed, but he's going to play better. That's going to make a huge difference. You know, and I think that number, the more positivity that comes out of Cincinnati, will drive that number back up to over 3.5. You like the Rams in this game. You might just want to keep waiting for the week to go on because you're going to get a much better number than you did yesterday when it was at 1.
The last we heard,
you know, the other one I want to hit before we go to break, and we get it, we come back. That Tennessee Cleveland. I mean, that under, can it go any? I mean, between the Jets and the Patriots, and Tennessee and Cleveland, those unders are remarkably low.
Yep, they're just bringing the number down, down, down. Last thought, as it pertains to the Bengals, Zach Taylor, the last we heard from the horse's mouth, said, quote, hard to say what Burrow's availability will look like for Monday night's game. Not expected to practice until late in the week, if at all. We will finish out some thoughts there. Also, more running back news as it pertains to Saquon Barkley and other injuries around the league when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Put the VSiN experts to work for you this football season. Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now and save 10% off a VSiN Pro annual subscription. When you use our promo code Lombardi, you get full access to everything we do, including the daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24 video access. And when you use the promo code Lombardi, you save 10% off a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribes. We welcome you back in to this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we were just referencing a couple of totals that are low and keep getting lower. It appears, Michael, the Rams and Bengals down from 46.5 to 43.5. And that line has been on the move significantly with the Joe Burrow injury news.
Yeah, it's at 40. It was 43, 44. I mean, that number, and it's going to keep bouncing around. You know, I've been really impressed with the Rams, Stormy. Their play calling, I know you watched the 49er game. I thought it was excellent. And I thought they did a really good job of protecting Stafford. I know he threw the ball 55 times, but they do a great job scheme-wise of getting the players open. And, you know, defensively, we know they're not very good. They've been very good on third down, actually, in the game. And I think, to me, as much as I didn't think they could win any games, coaching does matter. It's proven to me every week when you watch Sean McVay coach. And they're going to be a tough out. You know, this is one of those kind of family affair games, right? Zach Taylor's been with them. You know, Sean knows Zach Taylor. They kind of know everybody. Lou Lamoriello knows what Sean wants to do. So this will be a fun game to watch from a strategic standpoint and from a game plan standpoint.
Yeah, and Michael, too, an earlier point you made, too, when we were talking about kind of wiping the slate clean and changing our viewpoints and expectations of a team. Like, you even remember, I remember you writing in the offseason about how if the Rams were to have success this year and go over their season win total and do all the things, it would be because Sean McVay did a masterful coaching job. And it seems like here early on, that's what they're doing, because this is a Rams team that how many people were talking about competing with the Cardinals as potentially the worst team in the league coming into this year. And they've showed fight. They've showed skill as well and excellent coaching, to your point, with Sean McVay. So Monday night will be an interesting one against the Bengals and a team to watch potentially in the NFC West with some of the shortcomings that we've seen from Seattle potentially. So something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, no question. Coaching matters. And look, if they're going to have success, it's going to be in September when they're healthy and they haven't had any injuries. Mm. But where I thought they would really take a beating would be the offensive line. And they've done a really good job in that area.
Well, let's go back to, we were talking about, obviously, the Brown situation with their running back and Nick Chubb and now bringing in Kareem Hunt. But also we have an update with the New York Football Giants. Saquon Barkley dealing with an ankle injury, but their head coach, Brian Daboll, when he was asked yesterday if they would rule Barkley out of the Thursday night football contest, said, "Saquon's a lot better than I thought he would be today. He might heal a little bit different than another player, if you will. So we'll be day to day with him." He said, "I'm not saying he's out yet. He's a quick healer, and we're going to take this one all the way up to game time." So, I mean, that's more optimistic than I thought.
Can I translate that for you?
Yeah, what are you thinking?
Can I translate that for you? He doesn't want to give the 49ers one inch of knowing what's going on, even though everybody in San Francisco, Steve Wilks is like, "I'm not buying that." In fact, everybody in San Francisco is saying, "Please play him. Please play him." Because what you want is a guy who's less than a running back, particularly.
Right.
What you want is somebody who can't cut. I mean, if you can't cut as a running back, where are you going?
And if you're a 49ers defense, you're ready to feast on a guy that's himself.
You're hoping he's back there, you know? So it's like, I know what Brian's trying to do. He's doing his best Bill Belichick, not going to give an inch. But, I mean, I'm sure the Niners don't expect him to play. And you always want to play a healthy player over a 50% healthy player because you're just going to lose the guy during the game. And then all of a sudden, everything goes out the window. So I'm not buying that rhetoric. I'm not buying that coach speak. Just like, I think Joe Burrow is going to go. Like, I could tell from Zach Taylor's commentary, Joe Burrow is probably going to try to go. Will he be effective? Geez, I don't know. You know, I didn't think he was effective before everybody said his calf bothered him again, and which was probably the reason why he wasn't effective. So we'll see.
I'm going to refrain from following up with what I want to follow up on that because we have to talk a little bit more about Joe Burrow in the next segment. So I'm holding it in. I'm reining it in. As for this Giants 49ers game, though, Michael, we see the double digit spread, 49ers at home favored by 10, total 44.5. But do you think that the Giants and what we saw in the second half of that game against the Cardinals, particularly in the passing game, is that something that they can continue to replicate moving forward? Or was that just kind of all shots ablaze and
Cardinals.
Yeah.
We thought the Cardinals would be a 50-minute team, and they were. They got tired, really. I mean, the drive in the second half with touchdown, 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 field goal, and all of them took plays. It wasn't one strike. They had the big play on the first drive. But, look, I ran my numbers this morning, and I have this as a 10.29 game right at the number. It's hard for me to believe that you know, if the Giants are a legitimate playoff team, if that's what you believe, you need to take the 10. If you think the Giants are play to the level of their competition to Arizona, you know, to those teams, then take the 49ers. But 10 points is a lot of points in an NFL game, a lot of points. And look, the Rams played really well. I mean, Purdy sneaks the ball over with 1 second on the clock at the end of the first half, or else that game's 17-10, 17-13 at the half. Rams in the lead. Yeah. Can New York do that against this team? All I know is this: San Francisco's rush has to be much better. And without Andrew Thomas at left tackle, that's going to be a problem for Daniel Jones.
Yeah, we have seen, though, a little bit of money coming in on the Giants. At least this thing opened 10.5, so people taking that above the 10 number there, which I can understand why. But at the same point, like, the Giants haven't really shown us a whole lot of life with the exception of that fourth quarter. So we'll keep an eye on that line. Certainly going to be a very popular play in Survivor this week. The San Francisco 49ers will, and we'll dive into what our potential picks would be in the Survivor pool this week. Keeping it with running backs, though, Michael, I'm sure that you've seen this over the last couple of days, but that the NFLPA is dealing with a grievance here that's been filed from the National Football League when it comes to running backs potentially being encouraged to fake injuries for leverage in contract negotiations. The president of the NFLPA went on the Ross Tucker podcast yesterday and discussed his thoughts on it briefly. Take a listen. I want your reaction. Actually, we will hopefully take a listen to that in a moment. And now here we are. Let's go. Radio magic,
we've seen
baby.
Issues. Now, I don't think anybody would ever say they were fake injuries, but we've seen players who didn't want to be where they currently are have injuries that made them unable to practice and play. But you're not able to get fined and you're not able to be punished for not reporting. So there are issues like that. I don't think I'm allowed to ever recommend that, but or at least publicly.
Thoughts, Michael?
Does he look like he ever played offensive line before? Man, oh Lord, right? Something happened there. You know, look, it's all about contract negotiations. You know, if a guy comes in and he wants a new deal, you know, and he's going to fake an injury, what does that tell you about his team? What does that tell you about the person? You know, I think what J.K. Dobbins was trying to accomplish didn't really work out. But I think the sad lesson we're all learning, and it's hard, and it's one of the casualties of the position, is we see running backs get hurt. J.K. Dobbins, Achilles, the horrible injury to Nick Chubb. Nobody wants that, right? Nobody wants that. But, you know, they carry the ball 20 more times. There's 20 chances to get hit. They're in a lot of crowded areas. It's a problem. And so, you know, if you're the Cleveland Browns and, you know, Nick Chubb's your best player and you lose him, it hurts. So you got to figure out, you have to have depth. And if you have to have depth at the position, it's hard to give one guy all the money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to give one guy everything. And especially since there's a lot of other guys. Now, I think the lesson we're learning here, too, is it's happening in Minnesota. And maybe Madison will change. But when he played part-time for Minnesota, was a better player than he played as a starter. It's what I call the Scotty Williams problem, right? And, of course, it all goes back to the 76ers, right? Scotty Williams was a backup for the Bulls. He played 16 minutes. He averaged 7 points, got 8 rebounds, whatever he did. Sixers, in their infinite wisdom, figured, well, we'll just double that if he plays 32 minutes. Not so fast. He didn't double anything. Hey, some of you take a backup and extend his role. He shows up to be why he was a backup. That's what's to me happened with Madison. I think that's what could happen with Jacob Ford too. I think he's a good player, but look, if you take that 69-yard run out of there, Stormy, he's got 15 right. carries for 37 yards. He's not Nick Chubb. And they're gonna have to figure that out. So that's why you need depth. That's why it's hard to give one back all the money.
Yeah, absolutely. And to Jerome Ford's point, like, he's still young and still learning, but absolutely, yep. He's not Nick Chubb. That's very, very clear.
Nobody is.
No, perfectly said. We have to take a quick break here. One last thought on the J.C. Treader comments. By the way, those were on the Ross Tucker podcast, a great friend of ours here with the DraftKings Network folks. But the way that he said that just made me think, like, it's just keep that in your head, you know, like the way that you say certain things, it's okay that we all feel certain things internally, but it doesn't have to be made public. You don't have to say these things in the public eye. Neither here nor there. We're going to step aside. We've got a storm warning upon us next. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Looking to be a better bettor? Of course you are. And tens of thousands of people have already turned to Juice Reel. That's Juice, R-E-E-L, in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book. It's a tool to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all of your sports betting accounts into one app. It loads all of your betting history and gives you an analytical edge backed by nearly $1 billion in bets from sports bettors around all 50 states. Use that data to follow the winners and fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool, Juice Reel. That's Juice, like orange juice, Reel, R-E-E-L. Absolutely free. Download Juice Reel to your iPhone or Android device today and become a better bettor. Now here on the Lombardi Line, it is time for what we're calling a storm warning, because there are some teams out there, Michael, who were perceived to be contenders in the NFL and college football that maybe I'm panicking a little bit here and I need to warn some folks about. And players as well that were perceived to be taking a major step this year that are not. So we're going to start the storm warning with, Michael, whether or not you think we need patience or panic for Justin Fields. And yes, I already know the answer, but we're going to dive into it a little bit deeper today because he was asked during his media availability today about what's causing him to maybe think too much during games. Let's take a listen and react.
I felt like, you know, I wasn't necessarily playing my game. Felt like I was kind of robotic and, you know, not just not playing like myself. So, you know, My goal this week is just to, you know, say F and just go out there and, you know, play football how I know how to play football. Could be, you know, coaching, I think. But, you know, at the end of the day, it makes it, you know, they're doing their job when they're giving me, you know, what to look at and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I, you know, can't be thinking about that when the game comes. I prepare myself throughout the week. And then when the game comes, it's, you know, it's time to play free at that point. So, you know, just thinking less and, you know, playing more.
Do you agree with that, Michael? You think coaching might be taking away his instinctiveness, which is his problem?
Well, let's look at some facts, right? Let's look at some facts. Last year, he averaged 60.4% completion. This year, he's at 60.6. Last year, his touchdown percentage was 5.3. This year, he's at 3. You know, last year, his interception percentage was 3.5. This year, it's 4.5, right? Last year, he was averaging about, you know, success rate of 36.7. This year, it's at 36.8. Last year, he got sacked 14.7% of the time. This year, he gets sacked 13.2% of the time. So, like, I'm still looking for when he was playing good. Mm. Like, when was he cutting it loose? Like, give me that tape. I'll go watch it. I have no problem. I got every tape known to mankind in my computer at home. I'll go watch it if you want me to.
Our boy Femi's not giving you tape, but he is giving you, what was it, 8 games of QBR the last leg of the season?
Come on. Only Femi bought that one.
I'm not on that train. I'm just trying to, you know, give you some information.
Oh, my God. That's a joke. Well, you know, the first game, he and Jordan Love had the same QBR. What does that tell you? They were graded the same by Pro Football Focus. What does that tell you? Watch the tape. Like, it has nothing to do with cutting it loose. It, you know, if you could throw the seam route, which is wide open, you know, Luke Getsy's career is going to go down the tubes because everybody thinks he's supposed to be helping him. Why do you think Luke Getsy's calling screen all the time? Your boy Danny O's on the Worldwide Leader screaming that he's calling screens all the time. Why do you think he's calling screens? Because he knows he can get a completion. If he calls something else, he's got no chance. I would love for these self-proclaimed geniuses with erasers would get a headset on and call plays for Justin Fields. Get your Madden stuff, go in the basement, eat a little meatloaf, put your headsets on, and you call plays. You call plays for this guy. Tell me what's going to work.
Michael, it has been, I'll call it refreshing to see, though, how many people have had to backtrack all of the comments that they have talked about the massive ascension that was going to be upon us here early in the 2023 season for Justin Fields and the progress and the steps and the growth. And then we see what we've seen the first two games
and
of
no
the season.
No accountability. No accountability. That interview there was no accountability. None. Well, none whatsoever. Not my fault, man. I just got to play loose.
Yeah.
Well, tell me when you were playing loose. I'll go watch that tape. I'll dig it up.
You said the 60.6 completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks, 22 QBR, the worst in the league right now, sacked 10 times, tied for the second most in the league. If I am the Bears,
what
I have
did he do?
Major
concerns.
What has
he always done in his career? Stormy, what has he always done in his career? He's always gotten sacked. He's always turned the ball over. He's always had negative plays. What's he doing this year? Turning the ball over, getting sacked, having negative plays. I rest my case.
Again, his thoughts that he's played too robotic, wants to play more instinctively, and does think that coaching could play a role.
I'm waiting for my apologies from Bear fans. I'm waiting.
They're a 12.5-point dog, by the way, this weekend against the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, total 45.5. Let's go to the Cincinnati Bengals. 0-2 this year, 0-2 last year as well, I know. But the storm warning is out, Michael, for a couple of reasons. Most notably, one, the 0-2 is coming in the division, which I think is critical as we move forward here. And two, I don't know how you feel about this, but I think the way that the Bengals have handled this Joe Burrow injury situation has been awful. And that, especially since you're saying you think that he could play again this weekend, this Monday as well, I really, really worry about that, because I don't think that he should be out there playing until or unless he's ready. And that's something even his teammate Jamar Chase said this offseason, that we're going to need him down the line if we want to win a Super Bowl. If he's damaged goods right now with that calf, and this is an injury that could potentially linger all season long, that's not going to be the formula that you want if you're the Cincinnati Bengals.
No, I mean,
so panic or patience? Am I overthinking this? What do you think?
No, I don't think you are at all, Stormy. I think there's a reason to panic here, because you know this. You know, you may not have that ability to have that second half. You may be out of it by the second half. I mean, Baltimore has all these injuries. And yet Lamar went in there and played like an MVP. And they won that game. I don't know how they did it. The sum of the Baltimore parts are better than their individual parts. There's no question about that. But Lamar was great. And Joe's not great right now. Joe is not great right now. He's struggling to run this offense. And look, let's be clear. I mean, it isn't just Joe struggling. It's the offense struggling, right? Jamar Chase has 17 targets. He's got 10 catches for 70 yards. 70 yards. His long pass play is 13. 13 yards. What I see on tape is an offense that is too stagnant. It relies on talent, not scheme. I got Chase. I got Burrow. I got, you know, T. Higgins, and I got Tyler Boyd in the slot. You know, Higgins, they've thrown the ball to Higgins 20 times. They've attempted 20 throws. He's got 8 catches for 89 yards. His catch percentage is 40%. Chase is at 58.8. I mean, and Tyler Boyd is the inside slot receiver. He's averaging 7-8 a catch. I mean, they can't. They're like New England. They cannot make an explosive play.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because the line and because Burrow, I don't think he can drive the ball.
He can't. To your point about the offensive line, this is supposed to be the best group that he has had up front. We haven't seen that. Took more than 6 quarters for an offensive score for this group. And then defensively, allowed more than 175 rushing yards in each of the first 2 games and 24 plus points. Like, these are things that you don't want to have happen, especially in division games. And according to ESPN stats and information, Cincinnati, now the 7th team since division realignment in 2002 to start 0-2, with both of those losses being division games. None of the previous 6 made the playoffs. And less than 10% of teams in general who dropped to 0-2 early in the season, division or not, do not go on to make the playoffs. So good information, I think, to have. They are facing, once again, the Rams on Monday Night Football coming up this week. 2.5-point favorite there. Last minute and a half here. Alabama, the Crimson Tide, Michael. I want to get a college team in here, because that was, I know that they sat Jalen Milroe trying to see what they had with Buckner and Simpson. It did not work out against USF. What an embarrassing performance. You know, if you're Nick Saban, you are just upset to the gills when it comes to what this team is. They are outside of the top 10 for the first time in 8 years. Panic or patience with the Tide this year, given what we have seen these early games?
I'm going to panic. I mean, this is the worst quarterbacking play they've gotten. You know, and I don't think they found an offense for Milroe yet. I think you're exactly right. I think that Nick gave those 2 quarterbacks a chance to see if one of them could play, and they were horrible. I think they lost this season in the recruiting element. They should have. They signed Tommy Reese's guy from Notre Dame. They should have signed Sam Hartman from Wake Forest. You put Sam Hartman on this team, all of a sudden it's better. I think it's a recruiting mistake. I think, to me, this is what I'm seeing. And, you know, and Milroe, look, he's really athletic and he can run, but at some point you got to throw the ball in complete passes.
Yeah. And he is expected to be the starter based on Nick Saban's comments early this week against Ole Miss coming up on Saturday. In the game against USF, Tyler Buckner, 5 of 14 for 34 yards before he was pulled. Wow. Ty Simpson wasn't much better. Ran for a 1-yard touchdown, but 5 of 9 for 73 yards against USF, Michael. Alabama against USF, playing their guys, but a different quarterback. I mean, this isn't Jalen Hurts, Tua, Mac Jones, and Bryce Young anymore. We got to figure out what we're doing if we're Alabama in this spot. Okay, we're going to step aside here. Man, there were many more teams that I wanted to get to with Panic or Patience. Maybe I'll ask you later. But we got Harry Gagnon coming up next. He's got a pick for Thursday Night Football tomorrow, as well as some college football plays as well. Don't go anywhere. This is VSiN on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back with another week of football, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in the NFL action with great offers every single game day. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Throw 5 down on any of this week's great matchups and walk away an instant winner. Football is more fun when you're in on the action, so download the app now and sign up with the code VEGAS. New customers bet just $5, get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. With the code VEGAS, the crown is yours back here on the Lombardi Line. Excited in a moment to welcome in our great friend of the show, Harry Gagnon, host of the Against All Odds podcast, former sportsbook supervisor. But first, we have a colossal, one might call it a titanic cartoon with a Thursday night football pick to get us going.
Just finishing up my latest masterpiece.
Please do finish, or we'll surely drown.
The only sure things in life are death, taxes, and Harry's picks. Ta-da!
I'm taking the Giants plus 10.5. That's a Titanic side spread to cover. Relax. Harry is thirsty for a winner and just genuinely thirsty.
You saved us all, Harry. Now paint me like those French girls.
No time, doll. The game is starting.
I'm the king of the world.
Rose, promise me. Promise me you'll take Harry's pick no matter what happens.
I promise to... I believe Harry's picks will go on.
Harry, I'm a little sad that I didn't get the call to be that, you know, singing voice at the end. Oh. I would have loved to jump in. But hey, did you go with the Titanic theme because the Giants survived last week and now you're backing them? What was the thought process there?
Well, you know, we had that one on the back burner. So giving our writers and cartoonists a little a break since we had that one, since, you know, they're going to be playing on the bay anyways, the Giants. So a little, you know, right next to the water, we threw that one in there. So hopefully the Giants can get there. I do like them a little bit here, Michael and Stormy. Even though it was against Arizona, that was still an impressive comeback, down 21 by New York and Daniel Jones. Maybe that second half performance gets the Giants going, even without Barkley here. Next man up for the Giants, right? Matt Breida versus former team. Hopefully he can help out a little bit in the running game. Jones has some confidence back. I like him going deep to rookie Jalen Hyatt. He had two bombs for a catch last week against Arizona. And Brandon Ayuk, who's having a great season for San Fran, guys, banged up here too. Just hoping the Giants are out of their funk. I'm going to take them with 10.5 here. Some places are 10. And both Thursday games so far have been close. So I'm going to take the double digits here.
Yeah, I mean, would you still like it at 10.5? Or were you, I know you had it at 10.5, but now it's pretty much 10 across the board. Are you still in on that one? 10's a lot of points in any NFL game.
Right, Michael. I'm going to stay with 10. I just think that I know San Fran's put up 30 back-to-back weeks and look fantastic and everything, but especially the defense scares me. If the O line of the Giants can't hold up, Jones and Brian Daboll and the whole rest of the Giants could be in trouble. But I think again, I'm going to take plus 10 again. That Giants game against Dallas, it was kind of an anomaly sort of thing. We don't see games like that. I mean, it just went from the Giants being at the Dallas 15 to just going crazy in terms of Dallas getting the blocked field goal for the touchdown, the interception return for the touchdown. Game was over. Giants, I don't think, are that bad. They showed a lot of grit last week, too, not scoring any points at halftime and coming back with 31 in the second half. I think that keeps them going a little bit, and I'm going to take those points.
And double-digit favorites last year, while the favorites did go 27-3 straight up, just 11-19 ATS, so certainly favors the dogs, at least from what we've seen in recent history with the NFL. I know as you go through that NFL slate, there's always some potential teaser candidates that caught your eye. What are you looking at this week?
Yeah, I got a 7-point teaser here, you two. I want to go with the Patriots. Up to 4.5, plus 4.5 against the Jets. New England and Bill Belichick, no matter what, never lose to the Jets. The last time the Patriots fell to the Jets was in 2015. New England could have won both their games. They were very close, didn't pull them out late, but were in close games. The Jets D didn't look good last week at all. Sauce Gardner has been beat a few times so far this season. I'm going to take more than 4 points. I'm going to take the plus 4.5 for the Patriots. And I'm going to take that with on Monday night. The Philadelphia Eagles are in Tampa Bay. I'm going to take the Bucs up to 12.5 here. Now, I know Philly's 2-0, but a very shaky 2-0. Plus, I didn't like A.J. Brown, who was kind of making it about him arguing Jalen Hurts on the sideline last week. No one saw Baker and the Bucks to be 2-0 to start the season. Mike Evans has looked fantastic. And Tampa Bay's defense, Michael, has been spectacular so far. 8 sacks. They forced 5 turnovers. Look, pushing this game up to 12.5 on Monday night when you know everyone's probably going to be on the Eagles, I'm taking the Bucks with the 12.5.
Well, I mean, but you know, last week you were lucky because Justin Fields didn't play his game against the Bucks. So were we sure the Bucks defense is good? Because if he turns it on, I mean, God knows what could possibly happen, Harry. I mean, speaking of this, okay, so who is good in college football? We didn't have a chance to talk about this. Is Ohio State good? You're going to take the Fighting Irish. I mean, obviously, you're putting 20 in the hat like barbershop on Sunday. You're going to take the Fighting Irish against the Buckeyes.
I am. I'm going to take the 3 at home. Sam Hartman, the West Wake Forest transfer, has the Irish faithful believing with 4 wins, 13 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Notre Dame played Ohio State really tough in the horseshoe last year, and that was with having the Buckeyes having C.J. Stroud. After Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm not sure who can really step it up for the Buckeyes offensively. This Irish team has looked solid. Second half against 2 weeks ago against NC State, they really poured it on. Hartman might be the guy that could lead them here. I'm going to take the Irish as a dog at home.
We are one in the same because I am also taking the points with the Fighting Irish in South Bend. Sam Hartman has over 1,000 yards, 13 touchdowns, no picks here to start the season. And you mentioned that game against NC State. They have been tested, right? So they had to play in a tough road environment out there in Raleigh, whereas Ohio State, we haven't seen that based on what their schedule has offered so far. Indiana, Youngstown State, Western Kentucky, and we've seen a lot of flaws despite what we were able to see in this most recent game this past weekend. So I certainly agree with the thought process there, and I have that +3 in my account as well, Harry. So cheering you on from that standpoint. Sure. How about the biggest game in the country every single week following the Colorado Buffaloes? They are going to be in Autzen Stadium this weekend, taking on the Oregon Ducks. Ducks, a 21-point favorite this week. How do you feel about things?
Crazy. You know, Colorado goes from a three touchdown favorite to a 3-touchdown dog. I'm leaning towards the Ducks here still, though. Coach Prime's time is about to end, I think. Bo Nix torches this defense. Colorado really should have lost as a 3-touchdown favorite last week versus Colorado State in that rivalry. This Ducks offense is tremendous, 174 points in 3 games. No Travis Hunter for Colorado either, guys, here. I think Deion is humbled in Eugene. I think the Ducks roll it up big time. Ducks 58, Colorado 28.
Yeah, I mean, everybody just keeps on this Colorado. Look, I think Deion's done an incredible job. However, you know, without Hunter, like, they don't have all the depth that we think they do. And I think that injury really hurts them against Oregon. And nobody's talking about Bo Nix. I mean, you know, Dan Landing has the greatest thing going. Nobody even recognizes his team. Michael. Everybody just talks about Colorado, and he's a 20-point favorite.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, and next week Colorado gets USC, so it doesn't get any easier for them. And that game against Colorado State, they fell behind early, and they had to play catch up from the entire game. So much emotion going on with that, with the Coach Norvell's comments before and everything. So now having to go on the road after, you know, national television splashes all over the place, and ESPN was at Boulder last week, and now they got to go to Oregon. Totally different story. I think the Ducks roll.
Good stuff, Harry. As always, appreciate your time, buddy, and great work.
Thanks,
with the
Harry.
Cartoon once again. Round of applause.
Stormy, Michael. Thanks, guys. Love it.
Harry Gagnon, again, make sure you check out the Against All Odds podcast. It's a great job over there. And for anybody who did miss the news on Travis Hunter, it's a lacerated liver. He's going to be out at least 3 weeks for the Colorado Buffaloes. Their key Iron Man guy does a great job on both sides of the ball as an impact player. Did you agree with that thought process, though, Michael, on Oregon? You think that's the way?
You know, I think that this Colorado offense is really good. I'm not sure they're good on defense. I mean, because Colorado State moved the ball pretty well on them. So, you know, I think Charlie Scott's done a great job, but I think it's hard. This one might be a little bit, I don't know if I take the, I lay the points. I don't think I would do that, but I think Oregon will win.
I think that I totally agree on the thought process of the offenses showing up and showing out on both sides. That's why we see a total of 70 3.5, ladies and gentlemen, in this one. Just, you know, just a small casual number. We're going to reset for hour two when we come back here on the Lombardi Line. Don't go anywhere.